Peter, we're going to speak about the prophet Jonah again. We've already done this, but you insisted that you wanted to do it again.
Yes,
I'm sure you have plenty of reasons for that. We're actually doing the Last Judgment fresco in the Sistine Chapel, although he's not physically part of that fresco. You say his message is...
Well, he's right. I mean, if you are a cardinal going into the conclave, the first figure that literally hits you between the eyes is Jonah. Because you look up the Sistine Chapel and this gigantic figure sitting on top of the wall of just above the Last Judgment, it just pulls you right into the Sistine. It has to, because it's so dramatically beautiful to look at. And also, I think the reason I like to do Jonah again is because Jonah reminds me of all our defects, you know.
Bewilderment.
Well, apart from his bewilderment, when God was going to punish the people of Nineveh, he went in and he preached and he was able to get them to repent. And as a consequence, God saved the city. And Jonah was irritated. So he was furious because he actually saved the city. Like, no, they were not good enough. They deserved to finish badly, this type of thing. So it's and he was waiting outside the city and he was lying, resting in the desert, let's say, outside, and God gave him a special tree, a castor oil tree, as you can see here in this, to give him some shade and some comfort. You can see here in the fresco, just over his head, is this castor oil plant. And you see the way Michelangelo has painted it. It's beautiful. It's semi-abstract. There's little elements here in Michelangelo's painting, his fresco painting, that really are quite amazing. There's nothing invented under man that hasn't already been in some way presented and then retransformed and changed and moved around. But elements can remain. Because if you look at this Jonah piece, you have figurative, you have abstract, you have lots of moments of art, and you have what I would describe as massive expressive qualities. Here he is, he's sitting on this ledge and you can see him literally, the whole weight of this massive figure plumped down on this ledge, and he's leaning backwards and with his head turned to the right, and what he's looking at is he's looking at all the scenes of creation above. He's looking like across the wall of the creation, but primarily
on the ceiling.
Yeah, at the ceiling. And primarily he's looking at the first fresco, separating of the light from the dark, which is again an element which is strongly linked to the Last Judgment, separating the good from the bad. So there's always this constant message that's going through the Sistine Chapel: salvation and the choice of the person and the decision to go this way or that way, the right or the left. So here he's looking up at this figure, and again Jonah himself, having spent 3 days in the stomach of the whale and coming out afterwards when he was spat out onto the beach after 3 days, is also considered as an element which foretells the resurrection of Christ. So you have this being in the tomb for 3 days and the resurrection. So there's an element here of these 3 days. And also
he was in the whale for 3 days.
And
Christ was in the tomb for 3 days.
Yes, yes. And then you have, and then of course we have the three, which is the Trinity. So there's a lot of symbolism related to this particular figure.
The whale's here in the fresco.
Oh, the whale is wonderful. Look at him.
He's very abstract. I didn't see how Jonah could have got inside that.
Well, he looks like it was exhausting to get him out. Because if you look at the expression on the face of the whale, it's rather wonderful, because he's absolutely destroyed. He's like, as the Italians would say, distrutto. And he's lying there. But it's also a friendly kind of whale, because look, he's lying.
Snuggling up to him.
Yeah, he's putting, he's lying up against Jonah in a paternal kind of strange way. Look at the expression. It's almost human, the expression. And then you have these two putti, which are just above. One of them is looking very angelic and very tranquil and very quiet and reflective, with little blonde hair and a purple robe and stripes of yellow. And the one above that is looking more let's say, agitated, with the hands out, all the fingers stretched out wide. It's almost like this figure's trying to catch all the wind that's coming from the tree, that little bush or tree that's behind him.
Slightly bothered, no?
Yeah, he's sort of like, goodness gracious. I mean, you know, he's looking at him slightly perplexed, would be the right word. And again, he's surrounded by these swirling, lovely, fluid, swirling pieces that Michelangelo tended to put behind the putti. Oh, he always uses drapery in an indiscriminate manner. I mean, the drapery is used to go the opposite direction to the expression of the person. If they have their head turned left, then the drapery is going right. So he uses it as a form of movement. On the other side, just beside the head of Jonah, you see also those two little putti, like in a look like a little baby caryatids, just holding up the part of the throne that he's sitting on. Then come down towards his face. You can see he has darkish, greyish hair. And again, the skin is very clearly painted. The expression in his eyes is an expression of awe, in a sense. Now, he was a figure greatly loved in the early Christian church, because the book of Jonah is just a book of a couple of chapters. But he was painted a lot in the catacombs and places like that. Now, if you look back here in this figure, you see Michelangelo, actually, he did change his mind. He did enlarge one of the legs, the right leg, in order to pull the eye up towards the figure. And again, he has him dressed in a sort of turquoisey green robe, and the robe is so transparent in certain points that you can also see the flesh underneath. So that's quite interesting what he did there. And I'm sure many painters have studied that kind of technique there, because it's quite interesting where he's able to show a little of the flesh underneath a material that he's wrapping the figure in. And again, you see the hands, his arms are pulled over to one side. The opposite side to where his head is, look, he's looking over to the right, and both arms and hands are pushed over to the left. So part of his body is diagonal, the other part of it's horizontal, because you can see there's a straight line going across on the throne, the seat of the throne. So, and on that, he has his legs dangling. And if you're down in the chapel, in the Sistine Chapel, and you're walking up, you get the feeling in some moments that the figure is almost going to fall down off the wall. But Jonah, in a sense, he brings together, in some ways, the Sistine Chapel. He pulls together everything that's happening in the Sistine Chapel, because the wall paintings below, the ceiling above, the ancestors and the prophets all around, going around the other parts of the chapel. But I always feel that the orchestration of the actual event is being controlled by this figure of Jonah, who's bringing all the activity together. And he's just above the altar to symbolize the fact that just down below on the wall, just below him, you have Christ the judge. So he's focusing. He's helping everything else that's happening in the chapel to focus itself on the salvific and judgmental moment of the Sistine Chapel.
Heartfelt thanks there to Breda Ennis, a professor of fine arts at the American University of Rome. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.